How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 98 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head onto iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. You can leave a review once you're on that page also, and find us on audioboom.com too. Log on to normantranscript.com and check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site, and you can find all your Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday, as always. Tuesday show coming off the Thunder's six wins in a row now. 102-99 win over the Hawks on Monday night. Russell Westbrook, 32 points, 13 rebounds, 12 assists. I mean, I feel like my job at this point is just coming on and talking about Russell Westbrook statistics. Like, do I do anything else? My game story about Russell Westbrook statistics. Everything is just about Russell Westbrook triple-doubles. So, six straight wins, six straight triple-doubles for Russell Westbrook. This is complete and total insanity. 32, 13, and 12, like I said. 14 and 6 for Oladipo. 12 and 10 for Steven Adams. Morrow had 15 off the bench, including 4 3-pointers. Paul Millsap had 24. What a performance in the second half by Russell Westbrook. That was something else. So Russell Westbrook started off this game 1 for 8 from the field. He was 1 for 8 from the field early in the third quarter. Finally made a pull-up shot with about 8.5 minutes left in the third quarter. And after that, it was just nobody stood a chance. He outscored the Hawks in the third quarter. He did it on jumpers, really. That was the thing. His jump shot got hot. He actually was not great getting to and finishing around the rim tonight. I thought the Hawks defense did a pretty good job on him. The Hawks played a pretty strong defensive game in this one. But Westbrook, I mean, he was hitting pull-up jumpers. I mean, off the dribble jumpers. Like, what more? What more could you possibly want to do as a defense than force him into those kinds of shots, right? He was taking those mid-range shots off the dribble. He hit 3 threes in the fourth quarter, but these were pull-up threes. I mean, they did a good job, the Hawks defense, kind of forcing him into those bad shots. Like I talked about on yesterday's podcast, how Anthony Davis went for 37 points. But the Thunder did a good job forcing him into shots that you want Anthony Davis taking if you're a defense. Like, you want Anthony Davis taking those pull-up mid-range shots off the dribble. Like, those are bad shots for him. He made them because he's absolutely unbelievable as a player. But you rather him take that than have those putbacks at the rim, have dump-offs at the rim, taking efficient threes. Like, you would rather have all of those shots. Those aren't efficient shots. It's just Anthony Davis is so good that sometimes he's going to get hot, and there's nothing you can do about it. But, man, Russell Westbrook tonight, he got hot, and he's that good. So he got hot, and he was making those shots like crazy in the third quarter because that was something. That was some kind of performance from him in the second half. 27 points in the second half after that. 27 points, zero turnovers, which is a big thing. Like against New Orleans, he had 10 turnovers. He's really been turning it over like crazy this year. The thing is, the turnover rate is actually pretty consistent with what it was last year. I haven't checked what it was after this game, but it's actually pretty consistent with where it was at last year. He's just handling the ball so much more that the turnovers per game are way up. He's probably going to break the turnover rate for single season. Or not turnover rate. He's probably going to break the turnover record for a single season. James Harden actually said it last year, and he's not going to hold it for very long because Russell Westbrook's leading the league by a pretty decent amount and is pacing pretty far ahead of where Harden was last year. So unless he just cuts turnovers like crazy for some reason, he's going to break that. But the turnover rate, how often he's turning the ball over in relation to the possessions that he has the ball, actually pretty consistent with where he was last year. So that's not really such a problem, but second half, no turnovers. That's a really nice trend for him. Now, I don't think that's indicative, oh, Russell Westbrook's all of a sudden not going to turn the ball over anymore. But that helped the Thunder a lot in this game. Turned it over four times in the first half. That helped them a lot in holding off the Hawks at the end. They got a little tired. They didn't do well against the Hawks' small lineup late in the game. Hawks went small, Millsap at the five. And the Thunder didn't do a very good job defending them, I didn't think. I didn't think they did a good job a lot of the game getting out to the perimeter. They gave up a decent amount of open threes in this one. And I thought their closeouts weren't all too fantastic. But they shot pretty well. Morrow shot well. They did a good job on the other end creating threes. They took more than 30 threes in this game. They spaced the floor pretty well. Anthony Morrow helped with that for sure. Russell Westbrook getting in the paint, you know. He was not getting to the rim at an elite rate for him, but he's still obviously getting in the paint and pulling in defenders with him. They were really packing the paint against him. I thought the Thunder spaced pretty well on the other end. The defense was good. They defended the rim well. The Hawks also don't really have an offense. Like, Paul Millsap's great. Dwight Howard is an overly criticized player. Dennis Schroeder, I think, has really good potential. I think he's going to be a good starting point guard, but this is an offense which has mightily struggled lately. I wrote before the game, over their last 10 games coming into this one, they'd lost 9 of them. They were averaging just over 91 points per 100 possessions during that stretch. By far, the worst figure in the NBA. By far. By like 4 points per 100 possessions, which is massive. It's massive. Their offense has been awful. It's been awful. They haven't shot well. It's been a legitimately bad offense. But the Thunder... Look, the Thunder didn't relent. They did a pretty good job on the defensive end. I know the Hawks have been playing bad basketball, but I think any road win on the second night of a back-to-back against any NBA team, a road win on the second night of a back-to-back against Philadelphia, that's a good win. They're all good wins on the second half of back-to-back on the road. So I thought that was a good win for them. The easy part of the schedule is over now, though. It's done. They've played really since they had that stretch of Toronto and We'll say since the last time they played Houston. And their next game now is against Houston. They're off for a little bit. They play Houston on Friday. But really since the Houston game. So they were home for Brooklyn. That was a win. They were home for Indiana. That was a loss, but they should have won that game. They were in Los Angeles for the Lakers. Another sub-500 team now. Lost that one on the Nick Young game winner. Lost at Sacramento the next night. Second night of a back-to-back. Excusable. Then at Denver. That was a win. Versus Detroit, at the Knicks, versus Washington, and versus New Orleans, and at Atlanta. That's a pretty soft part of the schedule. A few packed back-to-backs mixed in there, but aside from that, in terms of the quality of play that you're going up against, that's a pretty soft schedule. Atlanta's not playing great. New Orleans is soft. Washington is soft. The Knicks are decent. Detroit is missing Reggie Jackson still, and they're inconsistent night to night. Denver is sub-500, Sacramento sub-500, Lakers sub-500, Indiana sub-500, Brooklyn sub-500. I mean, that's a soft stretch in the schedule. The Thunder should have a good amount of wins after this. And they've won 6 in a row. To their credit, they've done it. That Lakers game, that Indiana game, like the Orlando game earlier this year, you can argue this team should be 17-5. You can make that argument. Now, I don't think they're the quality of a 17-5 team. I think they probably are what the record says they are. But you can argue this team should be 17-5 right now instead of 14-8. But they got a tough stretch coming up now. Don't think, oh no, look, this team is now terrible again. Like all the tweets that I got when they lost 4 in a row last time. They lost 7 out of 9. Everyone went to panic mode, right? They lost 7 out of 9. They went to 8-8. And now they won 6 in a row. Now everyone's excited. Now they're great again. Now they're contenders again. Let's think about this with nuance. 7 out of 9. They lost because they got off to a hot start. They were regressing. They had some bad losses. They also lost to some good teams. They lost to the Clippers. They lost to Toronto. They've got Houston, Boston, at Portland, at Utah coming up. Those are all playoff teams. Houston, I think, is going to win 50-plus for sure. That offense is insane. Harden is ridiculous. They have shooters all around. That offense is awesome. Boston is a two-way team. That team, they have not played as good defense as I expected them to. But I still think that's a team that has potential to be top 10 defense, top 10 offense by the end of the year. Portland, one-way team. Really good offensively, lots of good perimeter scorers. They've been on and off this year. The defense is not at all impressive, but they're getting Alfredo Gaminu back real soon. They'll probably have him back by the time they play on the 13th. They're playing in Portland, that's tough. Then Utah, excellent defense, above average offense. going to contend for a top four seed in the West, and that's the second night of a back-to-back. This is a tough stretch for them. It gets a little easier after that, Phoenix, Atlanta, New Orleans. But this is a tough stretch for them. They can split in this stretch. That is really impressive. But just I'm preempting this because I know I'm going to get the panic tweets, the oh no. I don't want to get those tweets. Don't send me those tweets. I know now people are going to ironically send me those tweets. You can ironically send me those tweets. That's okay. But don't send me those tweets for real. Please don't send me those tweets for real. Speaking of tweets, let's do some Twitter questions and then I shall leave. First one is from Mad Kid Palm City. Can Russell Westbrook finish the season with more triple-doubles than wins? So let's go over the Russell Westbrook triple-double stuff. He's now got 11 triple-doubles on the season. He's literally now averaging a triple-double every other game. 11 triple-doubles. They played 22 games. That's insanity. He's like at the point now where if I were playing like 2K in a season and I were putting up these numbers in like my player, I'd move up a level because I'd be like, this isn't fun anymore. It's not realistic. Like who would average 30, 31, 11, and 11? Like this isn't realistic. I got to go up a level. This is like cheap. This is unnecessarily ego stroking for no reason at all. What is my self-worth based on what's happening in a video game? I'm unraveling, guys. This is me unraveling. 22 games. That's the marker. Remember, the night that Fred unraveled was game 22 when he psychoanalyzed the way he does my player and then emotionally fell apart in front of everybody. 11 triple-doubles in 22 games. My goodness. A lot of triple-doubles. I don't think he's going to keep that up. I also said, as I admitted on the podcast last night and have many times before, I also said I didn't think he'd average a triple-double in the season. He might not. But like, even if he doesn't, I was wrong. Because of like the force that I said that he wasn't going to average a triple-double. Like that was stupid and wrong. He obviously can. I said he couldn't. He obviously can. Whether he will or not, I don't know. But he obviously can. 40 is absurd. He had 18 last year. Vegas set the over-under preseason at 20.5. He's going to be past those. Which is crazy because like to get past the Vegas over-under, he still needs 10 more triple-doubles. And it seems like there's no way, barring injury, he falls short of that because he's got 11 through 22 games. He's got 60 games left. 60 games to double it, double his total for the season. It seems like an easy task. But like at the same time, like 10 triple-doubles for a season is an insane amount of triple-doubles. Like, if LeBron had 10 triple-doubles in a season, you'd be like, wow, LeBron had a ton of triple-doubles this year. So it's weird the way that Westbrook has completely changed the way that we think about triple-doubles for him. Like, he's doing for triple-doubles what Babe Ruth did for home runs. Only Babe Ruth did it in a sport and a league that was developing. And Westbrook is doing it in a league that's already developed. Like, Babe Ruth was doing it against pitchers who threw as hard as Russell Westbrook runs. Like it is unbelievable the way that he's like warped our perspective. Like he's done for triple doubles what the NBA's like TV contracts did to the salary cap. How we now have to adjust the way we think about contracts in relation to the rest of the league. That's what I have to do with triple doubles with Westbrook. And it's really hard to do. It's really hard because I think somebody says, you think he's going to get 10 more triple doubles? I'm like, 10 is a lot in the season. And I'm like, well, he does them every second. I think the Thunder are going to have more wins than Russell Westbrook has triple-doubles. I think they're going to win something in the 40s. And I just can't conceive a scenario in which any human being could possibly have 40 triple-doubles in a season. But, man, the fact that this is actually a question that I received, it like that's the newsworthiness of it to me, you know? That someone even thought of this. And I don't think it's... I just don't think it's going to happen, but like... Maybe I'll be amazed. I don't know. I've been amazed by so much stuff that's happening. Like, I thought I knew about basketball. I watch a lot of basketball, guys. And I really follow basketball so closely and try to learn so much about it. And then I watch him, and I'm like, I didn't know people could do this stuff. It's pretty amazing. From Smooth Vic. Has Anthony Morrow been a revelation off the bench? Would last year be different if he had singler's minutes? You know, I think it was a different situation last year. They didn't take a ton of threes last year. They were middle of the pack in three-point attempts, middle of the pack in three-point percentage. Sure, they kind of went with Singler more because he's more of a defensive player, and all things being equal, Billy Donovan's coaching tendency is he tends to go with defense over offense. That's just how he operates. It's how he thinks. This year, you know, he was hesitant to go to AMO, I think for those same reasons. And I understood it, and I thought he was going to go to AMO in the rotation at some point because Billy is so outward about the fact that he believes everybody gets a chance. Everybody's in the rotation at some point in the season. Everyone who could conceivably contribute in some way gets into the rotation at some point in the season. That is how he operates all the time. So I figured AMO would get in at some point, and I thought, just be patient, he's going to get in, and now he's in. I think his defense has been better this year. Now, I don't think he's been all world on defense or anything like that. And he's had his moments where he goes the wrong way off a screen and the Thunder defense has to, you know, defending a screen, I should say, and the Thunder defense has to, someone has to rotate and then someone has to help the helper and, like, it's all discombobulated and they get an open layup or an open three or whatever it is. And, like, those things happen throughout a game. You know, Morrow's issue on defense has never been effort. It's just been that he goes in the wrong directions. He's not a helpful team defender. But I do think his defense has been a little bit better. I think he's fighting hard on the ball. He's been like, he gets blown by, but you think he's fighting hard on the ball? The Thunder will always put him on the guy who's going to handle the ball the least. They're going to put him on the guy, I think, I should say, they're going to put him on the guy who's going to be the least likely to end up with the ball, I should say. Not who's going to handle the ball the least. So if there's someone who's a really good cutter, but might handle the ball a little bit less than somebody else, they're going to put him on the guy who handles the ball a little bit more than that really good cutter. I think that's been pretty smart by Billy Donovan, and things happen. Guys switch. The Thunder have a relatively switchy defense, and they can be pretty aggressive at times. They send big men high on pick and rolls. And that means that, you know, the guards have to come in and help in the pick and roll and that kind of stuff when a dribbler gets by Russell Westbrook or Victor Oladipo or Steven Adams or whomever it may be. When they send Steven Adams to the perimeter, those guards on the outside, those Andre Robertsons, those Anthony Morrows, whoever they might be, those guys are important. Those guys are important. I would not venture to say that Morrow has been a great defensive player, but I think he's been acceptable enough for Donovan to leave him in the rotation. And the fact that he's shooting well, the fact that he's developed a little bit of a floater game is really interesting to me. He's been going off the dribble a little bit more. He was just purely catch and shoot for a long time. And I see him going off the dribble a little bit more this year, which has been really helpful. Like, he's been pretty good at it because guys close out on him really hard. Because it's not just the accuracy of his shot. It's that he's got the quickest release I've ever seen in my life. So when you release that quickly, guys are more antsy. They're like, oh, no. And they throw their bodies at you because they know he releases the ball in, like, you know, a quarter of a second. It allows him to put the ball on the ground a little bit more. He's not squaring a guy up and putting the ball on the ground. He only puts the ball on the ground when the defender leaves his feet. But that happens with him a lot more than it does your average player on the wing. And he's a smart guy. Like, he's done a good job at recognizing those scenarios. I just think he's been a good situational player for them. He's certainly been helpful. I don't know if it translates to last year's situations. The thing about basketball, it's like different than baseball. Baseball, for the most part, you take a guy in St. Louis and you place him in Chicago, and the at-bats aren't all that different for the most part. And basketball, I think, is more contextual. It's one of the things I love about baseball. It's also one of the things I love about basketball. I love those differences, the way it allows you to analyze those sports differently, and I love baseball. I'm a huge baseball fan. But it's different. I love the way that context has to be taken into account for individual performance in basketball. I think that's part of what makes it really fun. So I think it's hard to say that this would be happening with Morrow last year. But he's certainly been good, and he's been helpful. And I assume for now, if he keeps playing like this, he's pretty stable in the rotation. This is a really good handle. Finally, from Cheesy Beaver. That's a solid handle, Cheesy Beaver. Can Sabonis make first team all rookie? Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Like this, he's been good. He's been getting better defensively. And he's shooting the heck out of the ball from 3-point. And you look at this rookie class is not last year's rookie class. This does not have Towns and Porzingis and Miles Turner and and Nikola Jokic, like, this is not last year's rookie class. Last year's class, no, it wouldn't have been all rookie. This year's? I mean, you got Embiid as the absolute, no question, unanimous rookie of the year. If he keeps doing this, if he stays healthy for long enough, it's just not close. Jamal Murray has a solid case to be second in that vote. Embiid, but you know, there are five guys on first team. I think Dario Saric's been pretty good. Jonathan Gibson is scoring at a high pace for Dallas, but he's not a bad team. He hasn't played a ton of games, although I assume by the end of the year he's going to have played a lot and probably be getting more minutes, but he's not a bad team and he hasn't been efficient. Malcolm Brogdon has been good for Milwaukee, but like Buddy Hield's not in that conversation. Like maybe Pascal Siakam is going to be on a team. You know, there are a lot of guys who like, I look at him, I'm like, yes, so Sabonis has been better. Sabonis has been better. So I think right now, if the season were to just end today, he'd be on that team. He defends well for a rookie. He's gotten really good at verticality. He's used that move a few times in the last few games, and he's been good at contesting at the rim. And you know what? That's a surprising thing for me. He's not going to be a shot blocker because he doesn't have the length. But if he can just bother some guys, and he's not going to be like a full-on, full-throttle rim protector either. Like, that's never going to happen because he doesn't have the length and he's not a tremendous athlete or anything like that. But if he can just bother guys, if he can rotate properly within a defense, if he can be a little bit switchy as a four, if he can know where to be on the defensive end, if he communicates well, which I think he really does communicate well. When you sit close to the floor, you can see he's really talkative. He's really talkative, which is cool to see. A lot of rookies are not like that. They're either hesitant to speak because they either don't quite know what's going on, which is always acceptable if you're a rookie. It's fine not to know what's going on when you've never done something before. That's okay. But a lot of rookies are either hesitant because they don't know what's going on, so they don't speak. Maybe they feel uncomfortable speaking because they're just rookies and they feel kind of out of turn. But Sabonis talks a lot. He'll direct guys every once in a while from the back line. He recognizes stuff pretty quickly. He's good at that. I think that's really encouraging. And he's shooting the heck out of the ball. He's got his flaws. He never gets to the free throw line. I think he's still only attempted 2 free throws all year, which is crazy. For a guy who was so great in the post, like his offensive game is totally the opposite. Like he's a spot up stretch four, but he shoots the heck out of the ball. He's 46% from three still, which is unbelievable. He and Joel Embiid, that's right, Joel Embiid, have been the two best three-point shooters in this rookie class right now. We'll give it to Jamal Murray, too, because he's draining guys off the dribble, and he's looking like CJ McCollum out there. But Sabonis and Joel Embiid, just from a percentage standpoint, have been the two best three-point shooters in this draft class. So, yeah, I think he's first team right now. I think he's definitely got a good shot at first team. I think he's got a great shot at first or second team. And I've said many times before, I'll say it again, I think he's going to be a good player. His work ethic is like, funny, because it's pretty crazy. And it, like, actually makes me laugh. I really do kind of think he's a robot. He's impressive. He's really impressive. I was tweeting about this tonight. I love when he hits a three or makes a basket off an assist. And he never really shows any emotion. Occasionally, he'll do a fist pump or something. But like the second quarter, he just totally expressionlessly bends his arm at a 90-degree angle and just points with his right index finger over at whoever passed in the ball for the basket. It's so expressionless and it's so subtle. It's my new favorite Sabonis thing. It's great, but he's a pretty fun rookie, and I think he's going to be a player. And so yeah. First team all rookie is definitely a possibility for him, if not more so than that. Remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. You can head out to iTunes to subscribe to Locked On Thunder. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. And you can also find me on Twitter @FredKatz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. And check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. Thunder are off tomorrow. I'm not, as always. They play again on Friday the next time. That's Houston. I'll be back with you tomorrow for another show, more Thunder, more NBA talk. Until then, though, Locked On Thunder is locking up.